Hello and welcome to episode 85 of Artsy Fartsy Immigrants. Hello, Mr. Bat.
Hello, Mr. Prince.
We were just talking about before we got rolling here how absolutely dog fresh we look today. I mean,
great that this is not a video episode. I feel like every time we actually do a video episode, I don't feel that good looking.
I feel the same way. Yeah. There's something like that first video one that we did, though, that wasn't there something kind of off with the camera position or the lens in a way that like, we looked kind of bloated.
We looked like we had like sumo legs.
Yeah, we had super huge legs. I mean, larger legs than I already have, but these huge legs and like. On the close-ups, I remember thinking, like, am I so swollen? It looked like I got stung by a bee in my face or something. I was like, man, I got to stop drinking. Super swollen.
I did,
too.
Nice.
Wait, you mean you stopped drinking?
Yes.
Oh, like, what?
I'm doing a sober October.
I was like, I thought you were asking, like, did I also look swollen? I was like, oh, no, me. Oh, you're doing sober? Wow, you haven't drank for 20 days?
Yes, sir.
Wow, man. I didn't even know that. We didn't mention that on the last show because I talked so much the whole time. But tell me a little bit about Sober October. How many years have you been doing that?
It's not that I do this every year or something. I just felt like this year and I wanted to do this like to take a break from drinking basically.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I just thought, okay, Sober October, I know it's a thing. It sounds funny. It also works good for me because in September I had this big vacation and I didn't want to bother myself with not drinking there. And so I thought, okay,
right.
October's kind of good and a lot of work to do, etc. So maybe that's a good idea. And it just came to my mind because, I don't know, I had a conversation with a friend of mine about, like, we both felt that in Bavaria, from a very young age, like talking probably around 13, 14,
yeah,
with all these activities and these clubs you might be a part of, might be a sports club, might be a marching band or whatever, like in these rural Bavarian areas, like with all these gatherings, you kind of get trained from a young age to drink, basically.
Absolutely, absolutely.
To drink a shit lot of beer. Most of the time, or wine, whatever, and may be different in some other regions. But it's a thing. And then it came to my mind, okay, since I was 14, that probably, and that's like 10 years now, that probably never happened. Like that I did not drink a single drop of alcohol for 1 month, probably not even like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And so I thought, okay, probably like... probably not the worst idea to try and do this.
To take like a conscious break.
Yeah. And then then I felt really bad about myself. Like I feel good about myself that I do this now and I'm kind of happy that I like I don't feel anything from stop drinking because I think that's the point where it gets probably a problem if you feel bad when you don't drink anymore.
Right.
But I felt bad because my girlfriend and I had a friend stay at our place because she had to be in Munich for a week for, you probably know this, Ausländerbehörde, all that kind of stuff.
Oh, man. Well, that's what the whole podcast is about, man.
Yes, sir. And she has an Arab background. She's from Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
And she and Tony were making drinks and she was like, okay, why don't you drink, Mo? And I was like... And I told her about that, like, I just told her, like, I do a Sober October. And then she was like, why would you do that? And then I told her the story, I thought about this, like, and I started drinking alcohol from a very young age, and I thought, probably it is time to take a conscious break.
Yeah.
And then she was looking at me, like, and coming from an Arab background, where obviously, like, alcohol is not that big of a thing.
Right.
She was like, are you guys here in Germany completely crazy? Like letting kids drink that much, etc. Yeah.
Yes, you are. Yes, that's true. Yes, she's right.
And that's the story so far. But yeah, I do this at the moment and I feel really good about it. And Yeah, but I think that's about it.
No, I think it's, I mean, you know, this is just on a, so far, short but very impressive list of things that you're doing to better your physical and mental health at such a young age. I think it's pretty admirable, man. It's something people can idolize, in a sense. Like, a lot of young dudes your age would never even consider, you know, am I abusing alcohol a little too much this year? Or I do. A lot of people, of course, look into their habits, you know, mid or post pandemic, because I think, including myself, I've been drinking way more. I have a friend who said that in the pandemic my friend Marcus, actually a good guitar player friend of ours, Marcus Schalk, he was saying that great guy, great musician. And he was saying that during the pandemic, during the real like lockdown of 2020, that he just didn't really ever drink at all. And on the other hand, here I am drinking almost every single day in some capacity or another.
No.
And I was like, well, why don't you? I was like, isn't that more? I was so blown away by that. I didn't even consider for a fact that maybe some people just enjoy drinking socially. You know, he was like, well, I don't want to just sit at home and watch a movie and drink beer. And I was like, why wouldn't you want to sit at home and watch a movie and drink beer? You know, for me, it's totally the opposite. I think it's getting to a problematic place, not in terms of me not being able to do what I need to do in my life, but I'm feeling the repercussions of having had so much alcohol in the past few months. I even had a conversation with my mom about that today, where we were on a walk and I was like, you know, I think I'm going to take maybe a week or maybe more, like just a little break, because I've realized that I've had some version of alcohol, either like one beer with dinner or five or something every day since we've been home, since we came back from the hospital. And the most that I didn't drink in a very long time was in the hospital, because I was there for 10 days and there was no access to anything. And dude, after that seventh or eighth day, you know, the food was so bad that we were eating very limited amounts anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But I felt so like I felt so cleansed. Like, and I was even told that I looked like I had lost a decent amount of weight. Mm-hmm. And I didn't do anything. I was just existing in that space, but I had no access to alcohol. And I felt so like all my bloated extra water weight had kind of just been peed out and sweated out. And it's interesting.
That's a very good point, because that's another thing that kind of drove me to this decision to do it now. Or yeah, like it was not a big deal of a huge decision to do it. But
right.
One point, like because I experienced it rather the way you described it, because I felt like, okay, through this pandemic, like I didn't get drunk anymore like before, like going out on the weekend to bar or maybe to club or whatever, and and probably or playing a show and probably get drunk afterwards or something like that. I didn't have that. Like I never felt like I was drinking to a point where it did something to me, but I was drinking pretty regularly, and that was, and at some point that felt pretty weird, because just like you described. Like, yeah, like every day, and it may just be one little glass of wine or one beer or whatever, but it's like it really became kind of a routine. And I didn't worry about too much about having an addiction, but like it felt so weird. Like I drank so often, but didn't get drunk. Like,
right.
Like having the habit without the effect. And that was super weird.
Totally. And I think when people start treating, especially people like us, when they start treating alcohol the same way you would drink, like, for example, this afternoon coffee that I'm having here, then it becomes kind of dangerous, because then you think, oh, well, now it's, you know, now it's 5:30. Yeah, I've earned a little beer, you know, and you just are so, it becomes such a mindless thing where it's like, of course I'm at the grocery store, so of course I'm going to grab a case of beer and put it in there and always just have it at home.
No.
But I know people who can buy a case of beer and it can last them, 20 beers can last them a month or a little more if they don't have a party. And me, 20 beers might last me, I mean, less than 2 weeks, maybe a week or so. Like if that's 20 beers, I might have like 2 one night, 3 the next night, 1 at dinner the next night, 4 one night, you know, and then all of a sudden it's been like 11 days and it's gone.
Yeah, sure.
You know, so maybe I should make a conscious, more of a conscious thing for my, maybe I should do like a, I would say like a sober November, but I got a birthday, so I don't know if I can do that.
Yeah,
it's all I really got right now.
but still, yeah. For me, it's like I didn't have any parties planned, etc. And what has been kind of weird is that I actually spontaneously have been to a party earlier this month, and I was like, okay, this is the first challenge, like going to a party without having one single drink.
How was that for you? Because for me, that would be so crippling.
Like it wasn't too bad, but I must admit, I didn't stay that long, and I spent a lot of time like on the balcony drinking spezi and smoking cigarettes.
Yeah, exactly what someone in rehab would do, you know.
Yeah, but what really benefited me is that, do you know how people, like, it's the pandemic and you're dead now. Do you know how people play beer pong these days?
How they do it? They do it differently? No, I don't know the new way.
They do it kind of differently because of, probably hygienic reasons. Like, through COVID, like, people think about, is it the best idea, like, have everybody drink beer out of the same cups?
Right.
And so what they do is, like, they just fill the cups with water and everyone gets their own beer.
That's not a bad way to do it.
And that benefited me because I could, like, play as well and didn't have to drink the cups.
I'm so glad that beer pong has become more of a popular thing here. Maybe it was for longer than I knew about, but the first 4 or 5 years I was here, it was just never even suggested at parties. It wasn't like people just didn't have it. And then I saw it on July 4th of this year, an American who's like, I'm friends with this Australian and she's friends with another American, and that American invited me along with a bunch of other expats to a 4th of July party. And it was cool. It was people from all over, like not just Americans, but a lot of non-Germans. And they had this huge, there's like a website that she bought this big table from. I think it's like biertisch.de or something.
We got a table like this at home. Just hit me up when you want to play.
Dude, I always want to play. maybe in November when you're back, when you want to drink again, we can set up a little game time.
Sure.
But just, I wrote one thing down that interested me, the way you phrased it. I'd like to dive further into it. When you said that from a very young age here, especially in Bavaria, German people, I don't know if it's specifically German men, are trained to drink. I think that, it is funny to say, but it's also really true. Like it surprised me to hear stories or see it for myself, like young boys, maybe even young girls with a beer or wine or whatever, being not encouraged, but not rejected away from, or discouraged, not discouraged away from having that drink so young.
Yeah, like I feel like there are two sides to it, and I want to say, first of all, like, I don't want to underplay, or how do you say, play down, underplay, I'm not sure,
downplay
like the fact that I think we talked about this in some episode, like that there are issues with a lot of people being addicted to alcohol in Germany, etc.
I think we did touch on that before.
We talked about that, but it is a thing. And like I said, it has to do with all these kinds of activities that you probably get into, especially, I feel like, I cannot tell you how it is like growing up like in these teenage years in a bigger city, because I didn't experience that. But rather in rural areas, like a lot of social events and your free time like takes place around these certain activities and these kinds of Vereine, like these kind of clubs. Mm-hmm. Like could be sports, could be the local marching band or whatever. being a voluntary firefighter or whatsoever.
Right, right.
Like in all these kinds of communities. And like I, for example, like with soccer, like a lot of young boys play soccer and you have these, they're called Vereinsheim, like the clubhouses, which have their own bar within it, etc. And like the older or like the adults that play, like sit down and have beers after their training, after their games, etc. And you get part of that and you probably at times get encouraged to drink. And I, like in my case, it has not mainly been the soccer club, rather like the, you know, the Bullwinkel that, that kind of, how do you say, youth?
It's kind of like a youth club.
Youth club, yeah.
Venue sort of
yeah,
thing.
Which was like pretty autumn, like pretty self-organized. And at times, yeah, I could say we did get encouraged, but I felt like it was, it's weird to put that in a right way, but
yeah, I can tell it's like, hard for you to phrase it like in this careful way.
Exactly. Like yeah. Like I remember like being 14 and going there and like, and we were all doing it by ourselves. Like this youth club worked like there's this house and it has a stage where there were like certain kinds of events, concerts, etc. There was a rehearsal place for my bands at that time.
Amazing,
there was like all kinds of games. There was a bar, etc., etc. And the thing was like there was one rule: like you could come there, you could be a part of that, and you could do there whatever you want, basically.
Yeah.
But like the one rule is you have to give back to that, like to be part of that community and to help, I don't know, cleaning up, organizing parties, or I don't know, sports events or whatever we did. And
right,
I remember
to be, like, be responsible for
exactly.
For
and
things.
I remember like being there at 14, and we, I don't know, after a party we were cleaning up like the whole house, and then probably, I don't know, some older dudes would encourage us or just casually, like when they brought beer for the other older guys, like giving us younger guys one or two beers or whatever.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, you can try it. So like drink.
Sure.
And that happened all the time. But I felt like in my personal scenario that this always kinda happened in a kind of responsible way, because yeah, we were underage drinkers basically. But and we tried to provoke it, but like the older guys always were like looking at us, and you would not get probably you would get a second beer, but you would never get a third beer or something like that.
Right. They just want to be like, hey, you earned this. Yeah. It's kind of a little, here's a little taste of the future, but you know, we're not going to get you drunk or something.
Exactly. And yeah, on the one hand, that probably is a problem, all these kinds of things. And it happens in all kinds of, yeah, gatherings, clubs.
But I get that that's hard to describe for you. I get that that specific scenario is hard to, it's hard to frown upon as equally as criticize, because in certain towns, in certain cities, in certain countries, things like that are just a rite of passage.
Mm.
You know, and a lot of people, most people, especially from that region, would never look down on that. They'd be like, yeah, of course, it's a young man, it's Bavaria, it's beer is part of our life.
They
it's
should
our culture.
Be drinking.
They should be drinking. I mean, school sucks, you know? No, I totally, and the comparison of that is so interesting too. Like, when you think about people here in Germany being 15, 16, going and buying cases of beer, going to the river with their friends, I see these high school kids buying beer, and I think, man, isn't it so interesting that there aren't that many cases of teen alcoholism, teen like overdosing, if you want to use that word for alcohol, like having these big bicycle accidents or crash, having fights in a pizza place. Like in America, you can't legally buy it until you're 21. So that means that everybody from that age, 16, where you can buy it here, is illegally trying to get it and then abusing it because they have to do it in private and they don't know how much they're supposed to have. So they have like four and then they vomit, and it's just a whole scene, you know?
And that's the, for me, like that's the positive aspect about how I grew up with it. Like like still yeah. I see like that it made me a regular drinker. That's the one thing.
Right.
But on the other hand, like remembering thinking back at that time, like between, I would say, 14 and 18.
Yeah.
We were drinking, but given the fact that there were always, like, I don't know, older guys around us that were kind of looking at us and were allowing us to drink, but not that many, crazy things happened. And that's, for me, as I experienced it, for me, that was the huge difference to all other kinds of drugs that are completely illegal. Yeah, because it wasn't too interesting to provoke anything with drinking alcohol or drinking too much, doing super stupid things. Obviously, we did stupid things when we were drunk, etc. But like in my case and in my surrounding, never happened anything super crazy, like you mentioned, like crazy fights or whatsoever.
Right. Which is super interesting, I think.
And and I think that made it a bit. Yeah, it was not like, okay, we as teens drink alcohol and misbehave to be rebels or to provoke because it's something illegal, etc. That just didn't exist. That's also like. Right. One of the biggest arguments, and we'll see what happens with the new government, like talking about the legalization of marijuana.
Which I can't believe Germany's even talking about that. It seems like they're so far away from that sort of mindset.
But like, if this new government, and we talked about politics, SPD, Greens, and FDP,
mm-hmm.
find a coalition and they start their talks this week, like they all have in their programs that they are pro legalization.
Wow. Okay.
Like there that, are
that's cool.
There are minor differences. Like the one party rather wants only like they want to start it with pilot projects with certain shops for a certain amount of time and see what happens there and then do the next steps. The other party is rather like, yeah, we just want to do it over regular drug stores and with kind of, I don't know, certificates or whatever. But basically, right. All of these three parties are pro legalization. But that's another thing.
And that's interesting.
And that for me as a teenager, that made a difference. Like with alcohol, you couldn't provoke anybody or anything because I was introduced to it. I was kind of trained to drink, like I said earlier. And in my case, that worked pretty well because, like, I think as far as I remember, I only had one time in my life where I, like, drank that much and don't remember anything and had this real, like, blackout and didn't have control over myself. And, like, and I talked to so many people, especially from other, like, cultural backgrounds where that seems more normal that these kind of things happen. Like that people pass out every weekend, et cetera. And that's something I did not experience in my case.
Which kind of proves the argument of maybe that wasn't the worst way to get into it. You know, like whether or not it made you a casual drinker, yes, but it made you a somewhat responsible drinker also because you have the agency and the self-control to say, oh, I'm drinking a bit too much this month. I'm going to do it on my vacation, but when I come back, I'm going to take a break. You know, you're not someone who, everyone has a few beer stories between 18 and 21, whatever, where they do something stupid, like falling asleep in someone's bathtub, locking the door or whatever. But, you know, some people also, but if everyone's going to have a story like that, everyone's going to have a story like that. But it doesn't mean that they have like long-term abusive issues with that substance. So it's interesting. It's kind of romanticizing the introduction of that, if alcohol is considered a drug, it's like it is romanticizing the introduction of that into a young man's life. And if that is maybe a better option, because I remember, I mean, I've told these stories before, but there are so many stories where I would, when I was in high school, I didn't get introduced to alcohol at all. I think I tried my first beer at 17 or something, and I just didn't really like the taste of it. I think my first sip was like of a Newcastle beer. And I just didn't like the taste. I kind of pretended I liked it, but I never tried to buy it. I never was outside the gas stations trying to get people to buy me beer. I never went to my brother's older friends to ask. I never even asked my brother to buy nothing. Mm. And my thing, of course, was more quickly into weed and stuff. That was just easier to get for someone like me. But there are stories where I would go to a party with these college kids and seniors in high school, and I would be a sophomore in high school, and I wouldn't drink. I just wanted to be around the cool kids, and you know, you'd smoke a little grass out of a Coca-Cola can and walk around, and you saw like the effects, like these senior cheerleader girls and athletes, whatever, just hammered.
No.
And like, you know, barefoot, stepping into a broken beer bottle glass, cutting their feet, falling over into vomit. And it was just like these images I have from that party, that one particular one, will never leave me because it was so like, oh my God, these were the people that I had on pedestals at school. Like these were the perfect specimen of people. And it never deterred me from alcohol. I just didn't like it yet. I didn't like it until just about college. And then, like, I remember my freshman semester of college, finally I was, like, playing those classic drinking games, whatever, the Circle of Fire, or was it Captain Dickhead or whatever, and then, of course, beer pong, I got really into that and really enjoyed playing that, but, yeah, until college, I really just didn't have that experience, and that probably led me to going really hard in the paint with alcohol in college because I was like, oh, I didn't know that this was what this was like. So I doubled down. And of course, everyone has those stories for themselves. Like, yeah, of course there was times where I drank too much or I threw up in front of people and felt embarrassed and probably experimented with more things than I would have had I been responsibly introduced to something like alcohol. Hmm. I mean, my parents didn't even ask. You know, when I was in high school, maybe they did once or twice, but they didn't ask too much, like, if I was drinking. And I mean, I wasn't, really, but it probably wouldn't have hurt to have, maybe for my dad to, like, you know, have brought a beer home and just kind of talked about it with me to show me, like, this is what it is, this is a big part of adult life, to not be afraid of it, to be responsible with it, you know, but you learn. And I think in Germany, that's something, especially in Bavaria, that's what happens a lot more often. You have people who understand this is a humongous part of adults' life. Alcohol is just a big part of your life, whether you drink or not. It's just around you.
Yeah, that's a crazy thing about it. Like, like I think, like rules like you have in America about alcohol, etc., just would not work here. And still, like, I had talked with my mom, etc., like, yeah, alcohol, like, yeah, you can enjoy it in reasonable doses, etc., but all in all, it's something bad. And on the other hand, like, you see, like, politicians that telling on interviews, yeah, like, that on international meetings, you have to drink all the time. And you have, like, in Bavaria, like, you have this humongous Oktoberfest. You have this humongous festival with millions of people attending each year. Not this year, not last year because of the pandemic,
of course.
Like, not even the world wars have stopped it. Millions of people attending that. And this whole thing is about like the breweries here and their beer.
Yeah.
People go crazy
there.
It has been a super funny because the thing is like you said, if alcohol is considered, a drug. And I think, like, no one who looks at it from a rather scientific point of view would say alcohol is not a drug. But still, like, in Germany, like, the phrase is always alcohol and drugs.
Right, right.
And that's still something weird. And there has been a super funny sequence at one press conference of, they had been interviewing I have to check a word here. the federal drug commissioner.
The FDA.
And they were asking, like, yeah, what do you say about like having the world's largest drug festival within Germany? And she was like,
what would that mean?
What? I would have heard about that. And they were like, yeah, Oktoberfest.
Oh man. Okay.
And so that's something for me, that was the weird thing about alcohol. Like, on the one hand, getting told, and for good reasons, like look at it from what we know about the human body and what is good for it and not, etc. Mm-hmm. Like that alcohol is bad, etc. And on the other hand, like, yeah, like from to the highest levels, like politicians meet and they drink all the time. Like, you have these huge events, like all these, yeah, these beer fests, etc. And that's a weird thing about it.
Hey Mo, one second, let me get the door. One second.
Yeah. So Jordan, there's one thing you mentioned earlier I would be interested in, talking about the artsy-fartsy immigrant part of the show. Like you said, you were on a walk with your mom today. Like, that means your mom is here. We don't have to get to private there. But what I would be interested in, like, how's that for you? Not regarding your personal relationship, etc., but rather like having that part of your, that huge, obviously huge part of your American heritage over here in Germany for a longer amount of time.
You know, it's kind of crazy, man. It's kind of interesting because, you know, my mom, she's really the embodiment of my past. You know, she still has her natural Southern accent. And she wears her, you know, Slidell, Louisiana shirts and her Ole Miss Rebel shirts. And, you know, we talk about my dad a lot and my brother a lot and her dog and her sister and, like, the local sort of things going on in her life. And to show her the stuff here is sometimes really exciting, all because she doesn't get exposed to, you know, a lot of these different kinds of food that we have here. Like, I think it's a little less specific. Like, I think I could be living almost anywhere in Europe and it would be the same experience. Like, I think, well, there's two parts. I'm kind of rambling here, but like one part is, I don't think she had a clear enough picture of how modern and westernized Germany is. Mm-hmm. Because when she first came here, I think she had the assumption that Germany doesn't sell like protein bars. Because she eats a lot of protein because of her stomach. Her doctor told her to eat, like, okay, extra protein. So she always has like a protein bar each day, and she has this protein powder she puts in stuff. Mm-hmm. And when she was first coming here, she packed like, I don't know, 50 of them in her suitcase. And then she had asked my brother before she flew to also, like, at some point, like, FedEx this huge box of protein bars, which would have cost a lot of money to ship abroad, yeah, and sure, FedEx and everything. And my brother had texted me, because she didn't tell me that she'd asked him to do that. And then my brother sent me a text and was like, hey, let mom know that this whatever in the box, they won't ship that, but I can do the protein bars tomorrow or something. And I was like, what? What do you mean you're shipping protein bars? So then I had to go talk to her, and I had to, like, kind of explain, like, look, mom, we can go down to the grocery store right down the corner, and they have everything you want. They have your favorite brand of soda. They have all, like, 1,000 types of protein bars to choose from. Mm-hmm. They have, you know, the kinds of beans that you like, the kinds of crackers that you like. They have the kind of cheese that you like. We have, you know, it's like the grocery stores, they just have different names for things. But yeah, we have all the same stuff, except for, you know, the beer brands are different, for example. And so then that kind of opened, I feel like that kind of opened her mind a little bit. And the flow of communication got better. Mm-hmm. And then we went down to the store the next morning, and she had this great sort of like energetic mood about her. She was like, oh, well, let's, like, what is this? And she started asking questions finally. She was like, okay, what does this mean? Do they have this? And I would be like, yeah, I'll just go look for it and bring it over. Mm-hmm. She would take photos of the stuff so that she could eventually go back to the store alone. Mm-hmm. Which she ended up doing, and like buying her own groceries and even buying some stuff, mm-hmm, for us. Like, oh, you guys need some milk. You need some of this and that. Mm-hmm. And that was such a rewarding feeling from my side to see my mom being so independent in a foreign country. Mm-hmm. It was something that maybe I assumed she would do quicker, but because
but has she been to Germany before, except for your wedding?
No.
Okay.
So I also have to understand that, like, all of my friends and my family-in-law and all that stuff, still very new for her. She doesn't really know them.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
She knows you the most because of the show. You know, she always asks about Mo.
Which is a funny thing.
Yeah. And so she always talks about you, or she talks about one of our previous guests and my good friend, Vivi. Mm-hmm. But she met Vivi a few times back in the States. But she's someone who, you know, wasn't often coming out to the city, even when I lived in New Orleans, to come out and like meet my friends or let's go do something together. And this isn't anything negative, but she just is more of a homebody. She likes to be home with her dog, and she has her, mm-hmm. her routines, and she has her friends, and she does her thing. So coming here and dropping her in this really chaotic time in our life, and kind of expecting her to be able to do a lot more things alone, I almost felt bad that I had subconsciously kind of put this pressure on her to accept things as they are now and just act independent now. And when I started realizing that she was shy and uncertain, and I thought, oh, of course, who wouldn't be, you know?
Yeah.
Then we had this talk, and now she's a bit more independent. She's a little bit more vocal. She's excited to see things. She tries new foods out. Like she's tried so far Indian food, and she requested it a second time, which is really cool. She's never had Indian food before.
Mm-hmm.
She's had Taiwanese food. She's had Korean. She's had Vietnamese. She's had Greek, she's had Israeli, Afghani, I think, also. The only thing that she kind of refuses to try, and that's fine, is like raw fish or like tartare, like raw meat.
Mm-hmm.
She's a little bit hesitant, like, ooh, that sounds kind of gross, and, you know, win some, lose some, that's all right. But she's really, like, eager, and she's going to the store and getting her own things and then coming back and, like, cooking us a home-cooked meal, like a roast with potatoes and stuff, and it's like, oh. That's so amazing. So, you know,
yeah, I believe that.
You know, I think like having any family member around every day for 8 weeks, of course, there are moments where probably she gets a little tired of us and we get a little tired of her. And that's just normal. You know,
yeah, sure.
Sometimes we get less sleep or maybe the babies are a bit more aggressive and like maybe you just have more stress. And
no. So
maybe the presence of another person, isn't helpful. Maybe you're like, oh, I just kind of wish I was alone with this. But then some days you're so grateful and thankful and it's easier and you can laugh and go for a walk and have meals together. So right now we're in a really, really good flow. And yeah, that's the big thing, is like to have had that conversation to show her like Germany is progressive. It is modernized. You know, of course, some things are behind, but not enough for you really like can't go do something.
But what do you mean with some things that are behind?
Stuff that she probably wouldn't notice, like the technologically speaking, or like infrastructure.
Okay.
You know, like there's bad Wi-Fi in different parts of the country, and
yeah,
you know, it's just stuff that techies like us would complain about. You know, like, come on, pick up the technical infrastructure, whatever. But
no. Stuff
like the grocery stores and the car system and the Autobahn and all that stuff, I think she wasn't seeing how modern and westernized the country is, because her first time there, she was only in your hometown, which of course, you know, doesn't look like it's really from the past, but she did get mostly like open fields, some barns, some villages.
No.
You know, maybe wasn't even sure if the house had Wi-Fi, sort of thing. And here she's got her own little apartment. She's got a TV that we got for her. She's got her, you know, her regular shows on there. She loves, you know, the standards like How I Met Your Mother, Big Bang Theory. She's got all that stuff. She has her, you know, we have American food here, Pringles, M&Ms, that stuff that makes her feel kind of safe. And, you know, we got that stuff set up for her. So I think she's way more comfortable now. And next week, before our next recording, my dad comes. And then that'll be her last 2 weeks. It'll be his 2 weeks here.
Okay.
So this is her sixth week here. And it's like watching her as an as someone who immigrated here, watching a part of their family learn their life is, yeah, like I said, sometimes kind of hard because you don't know what they expect or don't expect. And then sometimes really mm-hmm. rewarding because you're like, yeah, you see, it is beautiful. Or like, yeah, you want to see the river? Let's go look at it. You know, you have this kind of energy like, oh, you do like it. And she'll ask, she's engaged about like the family drama mm-hmm. and she'll ask questions and stuff. So I'm curious how it's going to be with Dad, though. He comes next Tuesday.
But like, does it anything like how does it affect you? Like, do you I don't know. Like you said, obviously, like you said, OK, it's but a lot of things that you kind of quotation marks left behind, like in the States. Like the local stories that are around there or around your parents' house, etc. But I could imagine that it also, I don't know, does something to you, like having, like you said, having that back in a surrounding where you would not expect it.
It's kind of comforting a little bit. You know, we don't have a million things in common. Of course, what I tend to think about or talk about here with my like both my work in radio or podcasting or this you know, this like video content creation stuff, like she doesn't know how any of that stuff works, so mm-hmm. it's kind of hard for her to follow it or really engage with it, and I don't blame her for that. So like, and then, you know, with screenwriting and like film stuff and the drama of our friend groups here and family and law and stuff, there's only so much that she can really have an opinion on. Most things she has to kind of just like listen and, mm-hmm. you know, passively kind of just be there for it, because she's not so up to date with everything. That's on one hand. And the other hand, being here in this world and having coffee with her in the morning and her telling me a story like, well, I talked to your father last night and blah, 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 this. And your brother called me and blah, 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 that. And, you know, my sister, she's sick. She, you know, it's like, having those little like mom phone calls, mm-hmm. In person, like with a little hug, and she helps make a coffee while I'm running around. Like, that's really sweet stuff that I'm very, very happy to see. And what I've enjoyed probably the most is like those nice little chit chats of just day to day, like regular mom time.
No,
this is probably the most time we've spent together in years.
Yeah, sure.
And
sure, like you went out to college and then you...
Yeah, and I didn't visit like every weekend.
Came to Europe.
Yeah. And then, I mean, since I've moved for sure, it's the most I've seen her because on visits, it's maybe a week, 2 weeks.
Mm.
And then, you know, this is only her second time coming here and I hope it becomes a yearly thing. I would love that. It's harder for Dad. Like mom doesn't work, so it's easier for her to plan a trip out. It's harder for Dad because he's working and he only gets 2 weeks a year,
mm-hmm.
which is nuts.
Only 2 weeks.
2 weeks. 2 weeks a year, man.
Yeah, like all of the stories you told me about, like having to take your vacation days when you're sick and not getting that much vacation days and insurances, etc. That's still something I don't get into my head about the American economy. But yeah, that's another story.
Yeah, and I mean, and I really wanna. This is like. This is a super fun, engaging episode, and I hate to cut it just shy of an hour, but it's just a little bit of a busy day today. But yeah, with mom visiting, it's cool. It's very nice to have that around, and I'm gonna tell you guys next week how it is with Dad, because I'm very curious how that dynamic will shift if he, you know, if he wants to like take the lead on things, or if he's gonna be shy and sit back and like let mom be like, oh, you don't know what Weissenbohnen means, huh? You don't know? You don't know what that is? Texas? You don't know? And let her kind of just be the German, you know, like aficionado now.
Yeah.
Nice, man. Well, dude, I have to wrap it up. I'm sadly so short, but there's lots more to talk about, so we'll talk next week. Hopefully I can be back in the office or find a good, like a stronger gap of time, maybe when Efi has some help. Otherwise, I love you, dude, and I'm excited to get back into the video studio, hopefully at least one time next month if we can.
Yes, sir. We gotta talk about next week, because I think I only can do an evening session next week because it's the Medientage, Europe's biggest Media Expo.
Okay.
And we have still a lot of work to do there. Another story. And yeah, hopefully we can get back into the video studio soon. I've just been there before our recording to mix another recording there, and it's still looking nice. And
cool.
We did a little more about the angles, etc. And I would love to get back there with you.
I'm pumped, man. I got to lose some weight first. Maybe I'll stop drinking. Nice, dude. All right, guys. Thank you so much for listening. We love you, and we'll see you next week.
See you next week. Bye-bye. Look out, baby. The saints are coming through. Man, it's all over now. Baby blue. Artsy Fartsy Immigrants. Ein Podcast von John Prinz und Moritz Batscheider. Produziert für M94.5.